We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hi, friends. I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. This week, I'm sitting down with TSBC alum Melanie Carlins of Grey Maggi. Melanie started letterpress printing in 2008 as a creative outlet while she was in law school and later taught letterpress classes at a local art center. In 2011, she started selling her products at local craft fairs and picked up wholesale accounts through her Instagram feed. Today, Grey Maggi is Melanie's full-time job, and her greeting cards are sold in stationery and gift shops all over the United States, including Paper Source. On today's episode, Melanie is sharing how retail craft markets shaped her business and product line, how she overcame creative blocks, and why her definition of success shifts with different seasons in her life. Hey, Melanie, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hi, Katie. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So 2018 marks your 10-year business anniversary. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What was your motivation for starting Grey Maggi?
Well, I've always been interested in stationery, sending mail, coming up with funny little ideas for cards. And then in 2006, I applied to law school. And at the same time, I was studying for the LSAT and applying to schools. Came across the story of a small letterpress company. I can't remember which one it was, but it was a feature on Daily Candy. And they had the women who started it, one of them had found a letterpress in their grandfather's attic or basement or something and fixed it up.
What and a cool story.
Like, yeah.
I wish I knew which brand it was.
I was like, oh, that sounds cool. What is letterpress? So I Googled it and then set up searches on eBay before I had like any business doing any of this.
Oh my gosh. Before you even knew how to run a press or anything. Oh,
so within the week I had like set up a search on eBay that would email me when anything letterpress related came up in my area or not, just anywhere.
Yeah.
And looked up classes. And at the time it was just, I was working a 9-to-5, applying to law school, which is kind of one of those like creative back burner sort of things.
Mm-hmm. Outlets.
Yeah. And then I did go to law school. And after the first year, I realized I needed a creative outlet. And I was still getting these eBay notices about letterpress. It's like, oh, I'm going to look into that. So there's a really great art center not far from DC called Pyramid Atlantic, and they teach letterpress classes. And so the day after exams, my second year of law school, I took a letterpress class and I just couldn't, like I couldn't give it up. So I went every week that summer and throughout my last year of law school. And then I learned how to use a particular machine that only one other person in the studio knew how to use. And then she left and she asked me if I would teach other people to use it. And that's kind of how I started teaching. I would post the things I made on Instagram or Twitter or wherever, and then started doing craft fairs and getting interest from Instagram. And it just kind of was never really a plan to sell my things. It was just a hobby. But
I was going to say, did you know you always wanted to be your own boss? It sounds like maybe you fell into it a little bit.
Not at all. Yeah, it was a total accident.
Happy accident.
And here we are.
Yes. Well, tell us about the types of products you create and kind of the motivation behind each of them.
Sure. Mostly greeting cards, snarky sayings. I started out with these etiquette bookmarks. Mm-hmm. And I used to travel for work before this was my job. And I'd go to used bookstores in all the cities I went to. And I started collecting etiquette books. And so I made these etiquette bookmarks that were updated versions of old rules that I read in these like 50, 60-year-old books.
So you sell your products via wholesale and retail, and you do a fair amount of craft shows, or at least you used to each year. Mm-hmm. How many do you think you did last year?
In 2017, I know during the holiday season, I did 22 events in the first 14 days of December.
Oh my gosh, that is so many.
But that's kind of, that was sort of out of character for my business this year to do so many during the holiday season. I'd sort of taken a step back from craft fairs for a little while, but it was how I got my business started.
So let's talk about that. How have those shows shaped your business? And then I kind of want to take it a step further in a minute and talk about how it shaped your product line too.
But sure.
Let's talk first about your business itself.
Yeah. So I just started doing craft fairs, you know, I make cards, and I was doing it with a friend who was also teaching at the art center where I was teaching. And we decided to do a couple craft fairs together holiday season. And they were, I mean, there were a lot of work. The first couple, we didn't really make any money. It was just kind of to get our product out there. And it really was just a hobby at the time. We were having a lot of fun doing it. I had a 9-to-5 at the time, and it was sort of an easy way to have this hobby play out on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And then the following year, my daughter was born, and I was still at the same 9-to-5. I took, you know, maternity leave for a few months and then went back to the 9-to-5. And with that, like, balancing act of, like, a job, a creative pursuit, a marriage, and a kid.
Just a few things on your plate.
I had to figure out, you know, priorities and how to sort of make them all work together.
Mm-hmm.
There is a recurring weekend market in DC called Eastern Market, and it's in my neighborhood. It's Saturdays and Sundays. And so I applied for a permit. And once you get a permit to sell there, you can do it any of the weekend days.
Oh, nice.
For pretty much the whole year. And so I thought, well, if I do that frequently, then maybe I can leave this office job, be home with my daughter more. And that's kind of how I really got started as a business that started, you know, well, as a hobby that paid for itself, and then a business that started paying bills and needing employees and help and things like that. But it sort of snowballed from that initial.
It sounds like that was your, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like these markets were your main sales channel, especially at the beginning.
For a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did that for a few months, and I would try to do at least one weekend day. And again, the first couple times I had no idea what I was doing. I showed up with a table and a tablecloth and a chair.
How is your setup different now?
It's crazy now. It's gotten a lot. I mean, when I did it so frequently, it got really standard. So I could pack the car in my sleep. And yeah, so now it's just bigger. It can provide for more products, but it can also fold up really easily and be super transportable, really easy to set up and break down. But yeah, that first time I was like, oh, right. I have all these cards and they're in a plastic bin, but people have to see them so they can buy them.
Well, on that note, what merchandising tips would you give people who are considering markets? Like, are there any must-have, you know, displays that you've used or, you know, I don't know, things that you now know in retrospect you wish you had had at the beginning?
So the biggest thing for stationery is to put the cards at eye level. And that's something we don't think about because a lot of us start off with tabletop displays. But I always bring table risers. I have tiered display elements so that things can be stacked up behind other things on the table and still be at eye level for the customer. Our products are all outward facing and you want people to be able to read those two-dimensional products. And, you know, for so many of us, they're text-based. So you really do need to be able to read them.
Absolutely. I only have done a few retail shows, but one of my favorite things was hearing feedback from the buyers and just getting, I mean, let's be honest, like some of the feedback is very positive, but some people just say the craziest things too. But it always intrigued me. Those first responses and like what their first impression was of my cards. What other benefits did you see in your business and how did that also craft your product line, hearing this type of feedback from people?
Sure. That was one of the, I mean, best outcomes of doing that market so frequently was the feedback that I got from customers. And I had the same people coming back week after week or they'd visit every few weeks. And the same way that we know retailers and the wholesale side of our business will ask what's new, that's what people wanted to know when they were shopping as well for themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I felt sort of an obligation or, I don't know, like an obligation to my customers to be like, oh, this is what's new this week. So that was one big thing I learned from customer feedback was that everyone's looking for something new. They're going to sit there and read through the cards in one sitting. So the next time they come, oh, I've already done this. I want to see what you did last week.
Was that difficult to maintain with? Like, was that difficult to keep up with?
I think it would be for me now, but at the time I just was so excited to be out there and churning out cards and getting the feedback from customers. Mm-hmm. You know, I was home with my daughter, who at the time ranged from 6 months to 3 years old before she went off to full-time preschool. So getting to talk to adults on the weekend was really fun.
And so I loved that was another benefit of doing these shows.
Yeah. So that was another, I was just excited to get their feedback. Another thing was maybe occasions or reasons for cards that they were looking for. And some of them were pretty absurd. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but you get people asking for a card that could only be used by 10 people on the entire globe.
Right, right.
So maybe you're not going to make those. My husband has a lot of those ideas too, but
nice.
So those were fun to hear, but people also had, ideas for teacher cards when the school year was starting, which, I hadn't thought of yet. Or, they would tell me stories about something nice that their mother-in-law or brother had done for them, and it would trigger a sentiment that I could put on a card that I hadn't thought of before. So it was also a really nice
It's an interesting point about the occasions too, or the types of celebrations that people were having, mm-hmm. and how that would impact your work. I think the release schedule, as we've talked about on previous episodes and we talk about at length at Paper Camp, the sales cycle for the wholesale market is so different than the sales cycle for the retail market. And doing those shows, you probably had a really great, especially as frequently as you did, you probably had a really great pulse or finger on the pulse as to what the retail market was looking for.
And the exciting thing about that was I could make a Valentine's card at the end of January and show up the first weekend in February with it at the market and say, hey, look what I made.
Yeah.
And that was a really, really fun part of doing markets too.
Yeah. Well, and too, being that you owned your own letterpress and you were creating your own products, it was a nice way to test things too. You could do a small run of things, mm-hmm. and see if they sold. And if they didn't, oh, well, it's not that big of a deal. You didn't do a huge run and invest a ton of money or time.
Exactly. I think it really prepared me for doing my first trade show, because I could wipe out, half of the cards I'd introduced at the retail mm-hmm. market. Whereas I know a lot of people do their first trade show not really having that interaction with a customer or getting that feedback or getting to hone in their line that much.
Yeah. Most people, you're right. They're going off of, retail sales on their website or Etsy or something like mm-hmm. that, just to gauge the interest. But that's also, as we know, buyers are all very different in terms of what they're looking for.
<true. laughs>
So how do you determine if one of these retail markets is a good fit for you? Because you're doing the one on a standing basis, but you've also done other ones too. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of weigh whether it's the right place for you to be?
When I was first starting out, I did a lot. And like I said, I did a lot this year too, this past year in 2017 for the holiday season. Sometimes it depends on what's going on outside of my retail business. And so if I have, we're planning vacation or the wholesale side of my business is super busy, then sometimes that dictates whether or not I'll sign up to do more markets at a certain time of year. But when I was first starting out, I just did a bunch of them and tested it out. And DC is a city that has a lot of local pride. And so it was really nice to be able to just kind of go and say like, oh yeah, I'm a local maker. My studio is just over, it's just like a mile from here or whatnot, and get out there and tell my story. But so there were a ton of markets. The city was able to support a lot of small independent craft fairs and markets like that. And so I was able to try out a lot. Sometimes the factors that go into whether I'll do them or not, obviously whether or not you make money, that's a big one. How helpful the organizers are is also a big deal. And you can kind of tell up front before you even get to the show what kind of your help you're going to get on site or what the scene is going to mm-hmm. be like on site.
Organizers, if their emails are organized and timely or whatever.
There's a bullet point in their email. You're good to go. But sometimes you just don't hear anything until the day before. And you know that it's kind of like every woman for herself when you get there. So yeah, so that's a big deal too. So logistics are really important, and like how much are you able to sell per hour? Because it's a lot of your time standing there, being there.
Do you track that? How do you track that? Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I track all of my sales at craft shows, you know, by item, but also like I'll be like, oh, this was a 10-hour event or like a 3-hour event and the sales were the same. So I'm not doing that 10-hour event next year.
Right. Let's do that 3. That's much higher ROI for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Yeah.
I hear you.
So that's pretty easy to track.
So we've talked a lot about the retail side of your business. You also have a pretty booming wholesale side mm-hmm. as well. How do you manage? They're very different. Mm-hmm. I've done it. You know, having a retail side and a wholesale side is very different. And the ways that you reach out to your customers is different. How do you manage that, you know, on a day-to-day basis? Do you just kind of roll with the seasons or do you have strategies that you use?
Yeah. I feel like when I was doing markets more frequently, then I would use the new cards for each season for the following holiday season. And so that was actually a little bit easier. Now I feel like managing any random craft fairs that I'll do throughout the year and Etsy sales and newsletters to retail customers gets a little messy when you're trying to manage both, both of those and making new products for that market while trying to make new product for your wholesale market too.
Yeah, I hear and I remember from experience too of like, even let's say Instagram, for example, like who are you talking to on your Instagram feed? You know, are you going to be talking to your retail customers and posting things that are timely for their buying season? Or are you also trying to pepper in some stuff for your wholesale buyers there so they know what's available to them?
Right. And I think that's a really tough balance. I think my voice naturally goes directly to my retail customers, mm-hmm. but I get a lot of wholesale orders or wholesale interest from Instagram. And that's kind of how the wholesale side of my business started was mm-hmm. a photo I posted on Twitter. And so you do have to remember to talk to both of those audiences.
You do. And I think, you know, you need to have some strategy around it, but I think you also need to let it be fluid as mm-hmm. well. And you know, buyers for the wholesale side are smart. If they see something that you're marketing to the retail side, they're going to know that their timing is different. And, you know, they're mm-hmm. going to know how to like view your product and see what they want for their timing too.
So. Yeah. And I was a little worried, I guess, when I started taking Trade Show Bootcamp classes and hearing that wholesale buyers wanted to be the first to see mm-hmm. your product. So I was a little bit nervous about posting things that I was making just for my retail customers to test out at a market or because I didn't have the idea for a Mother's Day card until April. And so I couldn't get it into stores that year. I was a little bit worried about posting it, but I think it's so clear from my Instagram or was at the time that I had these two really separate, distinct parts of my business. But mm-hmm. I think my wholesale buyers understood that.
They do.
I didn't really get any, you know, negative comments about
that. Kickback on it.
And if they wanted something, I would just get a phone call or an email and they would say, oh, hey, I saw that card. It wasn't available when I placed my order. Could you send me a few? And I was always happy to accommodate them. So
yeah. That's awesome. You know, you mentioned that you had your daughter about the same time that your business shifted from a hobby to more of a business for you. I guess my question is more like, how has being a mom shifted the way you run your business? But really, they started in tandem. Mm-hmm. So I guess more my question would be, how has being a mom and also managing all these aspects of your business, how do you do it? Because I hate when I get that question. But like, you know, how do you prioritize and how do you, you know, make sure that you're taking care of the things that matter most to you
yeah.
on a day-to-day basis?
It's tricky. And I think I also hate that question. Like, how do you do it?
Yeah.
But I think people really want to know. I think people, it's hard for everybody. There's a lot of conversation around balance. And I think my biggest takeaway through, you know, really trying to make my business a business and becoming a mom at the same time was just that everything has a season and you can't necessarily plan ahead for it. So I try to be flexible. There was a sort of like the perfect storm of things happening maybe a little over a year ago where my husband started a new job. And so he was less flexible and less able to help out at home. It was a pretty tough parenting phase. We were, you know, just transitions were difficult. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if it was burnout or creative block, but I just wasn't able to make anything for a little while. Mm-hmm. And then I fought it. I fought it really hard. I tried to put products out there and I didn't like them. I didn't want to share them with anybody because I wasn't that proud of them. And so, and my daughter was in like an after school program a couple days a week so that I could have some extra time for work on those days. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't happy with it. And I would find myself at 3:30, which is the normal like pickup time on those days, being like, I don't have another 2 hours of things I want to do that are work related. Like, I'm just going to go pick her up. And so, and that was so nice. The weather was beautiful. It was like, you know, those mild spring days.
It's a good reminder that we need to find like a fresh breath and rejuvenation in the things that really are important to us, because you were having creative block at that time. You had too many other things going on. Exactly. And it, you know, it sounds like you were prioritizing the things that were most important by, you know what, I don't need to just stay in my studio and work for the next 2 hours. I can go get my kid and we can go play for a while.
Exactly. And it was really nice. And we just, I was like, I'm just going to own this season, and pulled her out of the after school program for the rest of the school year. It was around the same time last year that I started taking hand lettering classes, which is something that I'd wanted to do for so long. Mm-hmm. I'd wanted to start doing Pilates, and I had put that off because I was so busy with work. And I was like, I can't do work right now anyway because I don't have any ideas. So I'm going to start taking Pilates classes, and I'm going to do hand lettering, and I'm going to spend more time with my kid. And, you know, 6 months went by and the ideas started coming back. Mm-hmm. And my daughter was ready to be back at school more often. And I have this like Pilates and hand lettering time in my back pocket that I can go back to more easily now. Like, there's no stumbling block to go back to those things that, you know, make your life a little bit more balanced.
I love this story because it's just such a great example of how self-care is so important to also the creative process and the decisions that we're making within our business.
And sometimes it'll just scream at you. You can't. Right.
Sometimes you need to hit that brick wall to realize, whoa, I need to take a time out here and I need to take care of myself. I've absolutely been there. I've absolutely been there. And to your point about seasons, I agree with you wholeheartedly, just from my own life with kids and business and all this. Like, we need to look at the big picture and see what's going on and just focus on the things that are truly most important, because the rest of it will fall into place. Mm-hmm. Even though as entrepreneurs and ambitious people, we put these high expectations on ourselves. I do think we need to – I love that story. Thank you for sharing it because I think it's a great example of just doing what you need to do and still keeping everything afloat, but making sure that you're the priority and your family's the priority.
Right. And it did stay afloat, and it took, you know, very little effort to keep it afloat. But when I was ready to go back, I was ready to go back like as a whole person and could hit the ground running last summer when I was ready to put new products out there again.
I think too, it's a good example of when we don't feel like our best selves, we're not putting our best work out there. Mm-hmm. It just feels, in some ways it feels like wasted energy. Like,
exactly.
I need to go get myself together and, you know, get my creative juices flowing again. And so that I can put my best work out there, because my best work is what's going to be the best thing for my business. My audience is going to like it the best. I don't know. I'm repeating everything you've already said, but I love this story and I love that you shared it. So thank you for doing that. Mm-hmm. How would, kind of in the same vein, like, how do you define success in your business?
I don't know. That's like it's a tough question. And it's something I've sort of been dealing with in this season, I guess, and something I want to address in goals for the new year is like the why behind it all. Because obviously I started this business, you know, alongside becoming a mom. And part of it was I wanted to make my own schedule. I wanted to have the flexibility to pick her up at school frequently and do fun activities on the weekend. And also to make space for the creative outlet that I've always needed. Mm-hmm. And so for a while, I felt like just like selling more things all the time was growth, you know, so that was success. Mm-hmm. If I was growing from year to year, so selling more in one holiday season than I did the prior holiday season,
right?
Or, you know, getting more wholesale accounts the next year than I had the year before.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, it just kind of it was going along in that trajectory.
Well, and that's a natural metric, especially towards the beginning of your business, to right. think, okay, well, I just need to surpass what I did last year. And, you know.
But there were so many moving parts at that point. I was having someone cover for me at craft fairs almost all the time because I was doing another event.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, once my daughter started school, I didn't want to miss time with her on the weekends. And so
right.
I would get people to cover my booth for me if I was going to do a craft fair on the weekends. I had someone helping me in the studio. And then there were just so many moving parts that I felt like it wasn't flexible anymore. And sometimes the changes you make aren't really in your control. I had an awesome assistant who was in my studio 2 days a week, and she moved to Baltimore. and I didn't replace her right away because I wanted to replace her with her clone, you know.
Right.
I wanted someone with her exact skills and availability right. and background, and it was really hard to find that person.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of let it go without like a regular assistant for a while. And now I have people who come in not as frequently as she did, and they have different skill sets as well. But it allowed me to kind of get off of that wheel of just, okay, more craft fairs, more wholesale accounts, more mm-hmm. Etsy sales, and just be like, no, what is this really? Why am I doing this? And yeah. so I'm revisiting that now. And
which is totally normal.
Yeah.
I think that it's important to revisit our why. It's important mm-hmm. to revisit our definition of success and what we hope to achieve with our business and with our time and the effort that we're putting into these things.
Right.
So, yeah, I know. It's the beginning of the year, so I also feel like there's a lot of, you know, that self-reflection that happens with, okay, what did I do last year that didn't feel so good and I don't really yeah. want to do more of? And what did I love? What energized me? What do I want to do more of?
Right.
And just kind of that assessment is good too.
Coming off of the holiday season this year, one of the best things I did in 2017 was find an accountability partner.
Nice. Tell me more.
So she's also a Trade Show Bootcamp person, Mariko from Meeks Press.
Oh, yeah.
And she also has a small child, and she's running a letterpress business. And we talked, she exhibited at NSS this year, and I went down just to walk the show, and we ended up talking one afternoon after the show was done, and realized that we have a lot of the same issues with same big ideas, same fits and starts with projects. And so we started over the summer just kind of checking in with each other and setting our goals for the week or the month, and then checking in and saying, okay, this is how far I got on this, mm-hmm. and things like that. And it's just been, it's been so great. But we met this week to talk about the holiday season and what we want to do differently mm-hmm. in 2018, and which is pretty much everything. Like, rewriting the whole script for the holiday season for next year.
Well, I do want you to celebrate the successes too, because you did, I mean, all the shows you did and everything. I mean, definitely, I can understand wanting to, you know, shift things and whatever,
yeah.
but I do want you to recognize the good things.
I think
too.
It was just partly coming off of that creative block and being so excited about having that work to share. And so,
yeah.
And coming back to my local audience, which is really nice and rewarding, and seeing them in person. And
yeah,
but it's definitely not an every year thing.
So what advice would you give to somebody that's just starting out in a product-based business? Or what would you tell yourself if you had to rewind 10 years? Like, what would you tell yourself based on all that you know now?
Yeah, I think I definitely would recommend thinking about the why a little bit more. And I know that can be really hard in the beginning because there's a lot of excitement about getting started with a business and getting your product out there, or even just finding an outlet or an avenue for your ideas. And so it can be hard to take a step back and ask why. But I think that's really important. And I think along the way, as I've taken a step back and asked that question, it's really shifted my business. And for the better each time, and made it a little bit more in line with whatever season of life I was in at the time. But yeah, if you can start with if you can start with that step, it makes things easier along the way.
Yeah, it definitely helps to shape your decision making. And I feel like it provides more clarity when you are faced with all these decisions that we're faced with as entrepreneurs.
Yeah, for sure.
So what's next for you in the business? What's happening with Grey Moggy?
Yeah, we're going to get our new products from this summer solidified and honed down and out in a new catalog in the next month or so. And then I would really like to start focusing on organizational tools. So more notebooks and notepads, maybe a planner in the future. But those are the products that I'm really excited about right now. And I feel like when I first got started, greeting cards were what I was using, what I really wanted as a, sort of an end customer. And so it was really fun to get into that process of making those products. And I'm just really into journals and planners and calendars right now. And so I'd like to explore that product a little bit.
Awesome. I can't wait to see what you come up with.
Yeah, thank you.
So where can people find you online if they want to check out your products or find out what markets you're going to be at or any of that stuff?
Yeah. Our website is greymoggie.com, GREYMOGGIE. And we list local events there. And we're Grey Moggy on Instagram and Twitter.
Cool.
And I think Grey Moggy Press on Facebook.
No worries. Well, we will be sure to link all of that in the show notes so people can easily find you. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was so great to have you and to hear about your story and how you've used these retail craft shows and markets to grow your business. I know that we've been getting a lot of questions from people about them. We talk so much about wholesale in our community, but a lot more people are focusing on the retail side of their business too. So thank you for sharing your experiences there.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Hey friends, a little fun fact for you today. Did you know that most of the brands that we interview here on this podcast are Trade Show Bootcamp alumni? Some of them are speakers and some are friends, but the large majority of the people I've talked to on this podcast are alumni. They have come through and attended our Paper Camp conference or our Paper Camp e-course. And both of these programs are aimed at helping stationery and gift companies launch or refine their wholesale program. So we talk about everything from developing their product and ensuring it's ready for wholesale to launching it to the market and working with sales reps, getting in front of buyers, and all the way down to exhibiting at trade shows, wholesale trade shows, similar to New York Now and the National Stationery Show. We cover it all because we want you to be educated and informed in how you're making decisions for your business. Now, many of you have been asking, when's the next program? When is Paper Camp going to run again? And I'm excited to tell you that we opened registration for our 2018 program. Paper Camp Conference is only going to run once in 2018, and the dates are March 1st and 2nd, and will be in Los Angeles. Historically, I've run this program twice a year for the last several years, but I'm cooking up some other fun things for the fall, so we are only going to offer Paper Camp in person and live one time in 2018. And if you want to get more information about how the live program compares with our e-course program, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp and you can learn more and also grab your seat. Now, I should mention, like all of our Paper Camp conferences, this is an intimate event. We keep the numbers small so that you can get your questions answered and you can have time networking with our speakers as well as the other attendees. So seats are very limited and we sell out every time. And since we're only offering this once next year, I really encourage you to grab your seat if you intend on coming. More information is available at tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.